Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 97 of the Peak of Sobriety podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emilson, and joining me, as always, we have my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And this week, we're going to be talking about the big, big news about Microsoft acquiring Activision Blizzard.
That's massive.
It's huge. But, I mean, before we get into that, there's also a bunch of other news about the game itself that we got this week. We have updates to Burning Crusade, which we'll touch on. We also have more changes to how you acquire the legendaries next year. And a few other hot fixes, like certain Holy Paladin changes. They escaped the nerf bat last time.
Don't worry, they'll be fine. They will be fine.
But yeah, so let's get started.
Let's kick it off. Yeah, so I guess this week, big week, if you follow TBC Classic, this week was Black Temple release. This week was patch release, and the next week is raid release. So patch went live this week for, I guess this is phase three, which is the Burning Crusade, which is Black Temple and Hyjal set. So patch went into effect. Raid releases next week. I'm super excited. So like, I will tell you that I think there are moments in my WoW career where I'm like, this is like an amazing game, right? This is like, I want to do this. And like we talked about, I think before, it was like the first time I ever did Mount Core, and like doing Blackrock Mountain, right? Or was it? Oh, what's the name of it with Defarian?
Yeah.
I'm blanking. Is it Black? I'm blanking on that raid. Yeah. Any event, the Nefarian raid, where I was like, man, I really want to do this. And then like killing Illidan, having played through much of War 3 and like that RTS, like being able to actually do the Archimonde like fight for the World Tree in WoW and then like killing Illidan. This is my favorite. I'd say if I look back, this is my favorite tier of all time. Like this set of bosses, right? Just for the like the fan service they did. So I'm actually hardcore leveling at this point. Like I have leveled for probably 3 or 4 hours my shaman the past like week and a half, every night. Like I jump in, start doing just quests. It's my shaman is 66. 66.
Man. You're gonna make me get back on and work on leveling my rogue. Because I love the Burning Crusade zones. I really do. Something about the way the game has changed has made them not as much fun doing them on retail. I think it's just the tuning. I really do think it's just the tuning. But I really do genuinely enjoy those zones. So my rogue is like level 48 or something. So I've got another 10 levels before I even get to Hellfire Peninsula, at least. And it being the Burning Crusade, me being a rogue, I probably want to wait until at least 60 to actually go to the Burning Crusade. Because otherwise, I'm going to get shit canned by the mobs in Hellfire.
To everything, but, yeah.
But, this is exciting. This is just like a huge tier for the Burning Crusade. Obviously, like Illidan is the face of the Burning Crusade.
Right.
It also is somewhat of a step up in difficulty from the previous tiers. Not that I think that's going to super matter, because they're still going to be speed clearing this stuff within a week or two. The series guilds are, at least, but it's going to be cool.
Yeah. And this is too, I always forget, but this is one of the first times they did like a raid release cinematic. So there was actually a second Blizzard did a like behind the scenes video with Taryn Gregory, who is their like cinematic director or lead. Mm-hmm. And this was the first in-game cinematic that he worked on after he got hired in. So it's the first time they did something like this. And the Black Temple cinematic with Akama like walking in the halls or whatever is like to this day is so cool. This is where like WoW, I think, turned that corner in terms of like both narrative design and just like a raid where you were like, get to kill bosses I care about. Like, I think, again, you see this with like Lich King in Wrath, right? Being able to kill him in ICC, like another sort of cool like flashback moment. But yeah. No, I'm excited. Like I'm so like, I don't even care how many times I do it. I just want to go back through the raid, like at essentially like similar difficulty and like re-kill all these bosses. So I'm super excited.
Kind of on that note, there's a bunch of stuff that we've been doing at Warcraft Logs to prepare for the tier release. One of the things that I've been working on is, so specs in Classic obviously don't quite work like they do in Live. They're much more flexible, and it's not exactly clear, you know, is someone with 31 points in Retribution, but like a Protection Paladin, or are they a Retribution Paladin? Because sometimes it wasn't worth taking those last few points in the tree for tanking.
Right.
So one of the things that I've been working on is improving the way that we determine who is actually a tank on a fight.
Oh.
And that's been kind of fun. But I've learned a lot about how tanking in Classic, in Burning Crusade, works. Because they care a lot about these rankings. And getting them right is something that they are very, very particular about. It's been very interesting.
That's funny. That's awesome.
And there's stuff like someone with points in Feral for Druids. There's three different specs on Warcraft Logs they could be. They could be an actual Feral, like Cat Druid DPS. They could be a Bear Druid, obviously. That's the kind of two big ones. But then there's a third one. All of the tank specs have an off-tank spec, basically. Because I honestly don't know the reason. I kind of know the reason. It's because if you don't have to tank the whole time, but you're in tank talents, then you would get to parse, and they don't actually want that, which is weird to me coming from retail, because on retail, like, that's a thing. Like, we do strats where one tank just kind of doesn't have to tank, and they just, like, do damage.
Yeah.
But they got off-tank specs, and so Feral in particular has been a bear.
Pun City. That's crazy. Yeah, I didn't think about that in terms of like, yeah, spec detection. It seems interesting, but also kind of difficult, I'll say, to get right. So
it's gonna be interesting to see how it plays out. So
nice. Yeah, I'm excited that next week all the raid stuff kicks off. So I will not be 70 and timed to that, I will tell you, on my shaman, but I'll be close. We'll get in there. And so one more, I guess, other piece of Classic news that happened last week that was interesting is that the hardcore guilds in Season of the Mastery, so this is the the Classic version of WoW now, I guess, I don't know, the original vanilla Classic. A bunch of people who have not died, basically playing hardcore, which is essentially if you die, your character dies and you no longer continue with it. But a bunch of people leveled to max under the hardcore banner and went in and defeated Ragnaros, actually, in Molancor, which is cool.
They had two deaths doing this, which is real unfortunate. But 38 people got their there's actually an extra, so there, we talked about this before, but there's a buff that you get when you haven't died, when you've leveled under the hardcore mode. There's an extra buff that gets added to it when you kill Ragnaros
without dying. Which
I didn't know about, but I'm wondering now, like, is there one for Nefarian? Are we gonna be seeing people going for, like,
that'd be so cool.
Are we going to see somebody at the end of the expansion or at the end of the season that's got, you know, this long list of raid achievements, basically, that they did without dying?
I hope they keep adding them. I hope there's one for Nefarian. I hope there's one for, like, what is it? Kel'Thuzad, right?
Yeah.
I hope.
Nizoth. Yeah. Or not Nizoth. C'Thun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope they do it all, because I think that would be really cool. But, and if somebody gets them all, that'd be, you know, if they actually did this, which would be interesting, if there is an achievement for each one, which I hope there is, but then I hope they do something like the Hall of Fame that we have in retail, but with someone who has literally not died through every tier, basically, mm-hmm. right? and been like, here's the list of players for like season one of Season of the Mastery that like killed every raid boss without dying on hardcore. And it's just like a website with like their name and their character name or whatever, but that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
They could put something like that together. That'd
be super cool.
Yeah. Well, cool. So then I think that's it on the classic news. I guess we can shift gears a little bit into retail. And there was a big, I guess, announcement. Race for World First, like sort of impacting is that Limit, who previously was Complexity Limit, and that sort of partnership and contract had ended basically before the holidays, I want to say. And so Limit yesterday, basically announced that Team Liquid is acquiring them. And so for those who don't know who Team Liquid is, Team Liquid started way back in like probably the late 90s, like 1998, 99 type time frame as just a forum for StarCraft Brood War. And it was like a EU and US based forum for like following Brood War in Korea, which was like the massive game then. And eventually that forum turned into a StarCraft 2 team when StarCraft 2 came out in 98 and has since just grown to basically have teams in almost any major game. You know, there's a Team Liquid in League. There's a Team Liquid. Well, there was a Team Liquid in Dota 2. There's a Team Liquid in CS Source or whatever the Counter-Strike game is now. I think it's Global Offensive. And they're basically a massive esports organization. I think when I was reading up on them, they're worth almost $200 million or something ridiculous,
yep.
Which is like in the concept of esports teams is a lot of money. So this essentially is not really a sponsorship or partnership. Basically, Team Liquid acquired Limit, and like Limit is just turning into Liquid with like Max becoming a minority owner in Team Liquid. Azoria, who was the general manager, you could call of Limit, becoming the general manager of the MMO division at Liquid. So this seems like it's a play by Liquid to basically get into MMOs in a more serious way. So while the announcement is cool for Limit, like the guild itself gets to partner with probably one of the the premier esports organizations in the world right now. It also is super cool for like the future of MMOs and like what esports teams do with them. So I don't know what your thoughts are.
Yeah. So they specifically mentioned like obviously Limit does World of Warcraft, but there's also talk about them having like a Final Fantasy team, which is going to be interesting. Like we were talking a little bit before the show about how different a Race to World First for Final Fantasy would look with how short progression is for those. Like I would expect that to be over in an afternoon. You know, or a day at most. So it's a very different thing from going for World First in WoW. But then up on the horizon, you know, we've got the Riot MMO and things like that, that who knows what that is going to look like. You know, Greg Street from back in the day in WoW is one of the head designers of the Riot MMO. So is it gonna like is raiding in that gonna look like raiding in WoW in some meaningful way in terms of like difficulty and scale of the content?
Right.
So this is both, I think, interesting for like really good for WoW, really interesting from the Race to World First perspective in WoW, but also I think forward looking because we are seeing a resurgence in MMOs in general. Mm-hmm. And this is like they're kind of planting their flag, you know, we're gonna support this kind of content. Going forward.
Oh yeah. I think that's the bigger part of this. Like it's really cool for Limit, really cool for the next World First Race, right? And those guys. But I think the idea of this now being like Liquid taking a much larger position in MMOs in general is really cool. Like we might end up being like even to your point, like the Final Fantasy race might be short, but it will be like Team Liquid going for World First in Final Fantasy, and they might put on a smaller event, right? But it'll still be a like bunch of eyes, like a bunch of marketing behind that, which is fun. So, no, this is awesome for them. I mean, this really positions them as like I think the biggest thing this does though for them is they like in a game like WoW, which is very different than I'll say other esports, right? Like this sort of Race for World First, since it is so community driven, like they now are like the big dogs on the block, right? Like no yeah. other, like Method, while is an organization, they were sort of the top team. I think they're world third, right? They were never as large as Liquid was, right? So like even at the height of it, like Method was never this big. And to be fair, Echo's not an esports organization. They're just a WoW guild, right? Yeah. So like Echo's just as small. So there's a huge target, I think, on Liquid's back right now. And we'll see if they actually can perform, right? Because essentially it's like they're now the Goliath in this sort of situation where probably yeah. like what, probably 4 or 5 tiers ago, they were the David trying to come in and uproot like the European. So
yeah. Is gonna be really interesting for next year as well, you know. I am really curious what the Race to World First this year is going to look like. It's going to be crazy. And I know there's been talk that a lot of people speculating that the Race to World First this year is going to go into the second reset because of how they can't test the last three bosses at all.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And I think I almost foresee it having to go to the second reset, because I don't think, like we've talked about this when we talked about like how we think boss difficulty will be, I think, or how the tier ends. I don't think Blizzard makes the same mistake that makes another Fate Scribe Guardian KT mistake, right? With the second half of Raidus. I don't think they make that with like the Lords of Dread and Ryathon, whatever the other boss's name over there.
Yeah.
Like those two bosses, if anything, will be overtuned to start and will be brought down, right? Versus, yeah. But I don't think Blizzard will leave it to chance on those like last three. So
yeah, skipping around a little bit, we have some changes as well to legendary acquisition that tie into that. If you recall from last week, the second your Covenant legendary that you can equip with another non-Covenant legendary was on the rep vendor at like Revered. And so people were talking like, oh, 28 days-ish after the patch, you could have this legendary, which would put it at like the second or third mythic week, unless you got super lucky. Now, it is being tied to the campaign, which currently puts it at the third week of mythic, and it's just a straight-up time gate. There's no rep component to it. There's still a rep component for being able to craft it on any slot.
Right.
But there's no longer a rep component for just getting the legendary, which does mean that, I mean, if it effectively confirms that the world first race is going to be done with tier sets, but not legendaries.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I mean, I think we talked a little bit about this, and it's funny. I actually brought this up in Peak this week, and I was like, I was so confused as to why everybody thought this was about rep. Right. Because like in my mind, their original announcement was always, you will get a thing to put it on anything that'll be gated by rep or gated in the future. And then you will get an item that has the power on it in the campaign. Somebody actually linked me. It was actually an interview where they said rep, and it was an interview given to, I forget if it was a Chinese or Korean, like publication, but there was a Wowhead article on it that was Google translated. And basically the translation was like, the belt will be like gated behind rep. We have to like raise your rep with the Enlightened too, which is the new rep right there, to gain access to the belt. So like, that's, I guess, where the community latched onto it. I didn't realize that, but to me, that didn't feel like it never felt right. Just in terms of the way that if you look at items like this that Blizzard has given to players previously, like every one of those items has been given to you through the story, right? At least over the past two or three expansions, right? If you go back far enough, you can talk about like rep, like BC, for example, the shoulder enchants were rep bound between Alder and Scryer. There wasn't really a bunch of like hoopla or like fanfare around those getting it. But yeah, in the past few expansions and patches, like significant items that were given to you that your character could use or legendary sort of powers were gated behind a story or gated behind a set of quests that you would do, not just get a rep to Exalted and then you get it, right? Or Revered, I mean, or whatever.
We see this also with the legendaries post BC and pre, basically all the legendaries except for BC and Legion in Shadowlands. But, you know, the old legendary system was that it's a quest line.
Right. Yeah.
You did a quest line for the daggers in the last patch in Dragon Soul. You did a quest line for Dragonwrath, for Shadowmourne, for Atiesh. You know,
right.
All of these were just built around you. You do a quest, and there was always a raid element to it. And in some cases, also a grind element to it. Looking at you, Sulphurous. But
yeah,
there's it. It has historically, like, this is the kind of thing they tie to a quest line.
Yeah,
I think for me, I still want them to just like, I don't want the second legendaries to be basically the nerf to the tier. That's my big thing, is I really don't think, because I'm just afraid of it breaking the tier again in the way that, you know, rank 5 dom sets just completely broke Sanctum.
Right.
It just like completely invalidated all the damage checks. It in many cases just broke the fights. Remnant being one that, like, I like the boss fight, but every time we re-cleared it, having it, the timers changed because our damage was just so much higher.
Yeah, I mean, we still wiped to that fight. We wiped to that fight this week due to that exact thing, which was just like, we thought we were going to put, like, we didn't think we'd make a push, so we held damage, but the boss didn't cast orbs, and then we went to push, and the boss casted orbs, and then didn't cast shatter for, like, 15 or 20 seconds afterwards, and, like, ended up being like, just, and then like when we finally got to the malevolence in phase 3, it was just desynced, where we had like puddles plus having to dispel plus having to like make sure you're in position for the other knockback. Yeah. And like it's to this day it's still rough, but the way that the Blizzard sort of posted about this, which is something which we'll touch on too, maybe, is sort of they've started to be a little bit more verbose in their like responses to things, right? You could say is that they basically said, like, this is sort of them soft nerfing the instance, right? Which is what essentially gear is in general. The problem is that, like, generally you slowly get better with gear. Like, it's not and in this case, you are going to become X percentage points more powerful the moment you do this and get this spell, right? So like it's not a smooth power increase, which is, I think, the only thing you could say that sucks about this, right? Is there'll be a point of inflection where, like, to your point, things will get noticeably easier just because you made it through 3 weeks of doing the harder version of this thing, right?
Yeah.
So that's sort of the problem is that some, like, single items in general might just have too much power associated to them. And I don't think we need a legendary every, like, I guess, instance or tier or whatever you want to call it, right?
Yeah. So, flip side, at least unlike dom sets, this is going to be clearly, like, everybody is going to get this at the same time. You're going to get your belt the third week of Mythic. There's no rep to grind. You just get on, you do your weekly quests. And then you have your second legendary. So the only real variance in, like, power on kind of a large scale is when people get their 4 pieces.
Right. Exactly. So jumped around a little bit. We can talk a little bit just about the dev. We can skip some of the, I guess, just real quick, some of those other topics we jumped over. There was another sort of breaking WoW podcast, which with a bunch of folks from, like, WoWhead in terms of the writers there, but it was from the MO cast, and basically they talked a lot about, like, a lot of different topics. I recommend you sort of check it out for some thoughts from a community perspective. Some of the interesting stuff that I pulled out of it was essentially they talked a very long time about power infusion and essentially external buffs. That was sort of, I think, the majority of this discussion. And I mean, other than, like, some of the points they bring up is interesting. It's just, I don't know if I particularly agree with it. So the main points they were talking about was, like, number one, as a new player, you generally don't know why you have, say, power infusion as a button. So if you don't read a guide or, like, look at logs or anything like that, you would just assume that power infusion gets used on yourself 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't even know, like, the interaction there. And then vice versa, if you are the person who is giving out power infusion, it just feels bad. It just does not feel fun. Like, you gain no benefit from hitting this button. You get to watch other people gain benefit from your button, which I think that argument is, like, less of a, I don't know. I don't feel too bad about that, I guess, personally. Because like if you're playing a class that is a support class, like the idea is you will hit buttons to make other people stronger, right?
Right.
Like that was always like when I will tell you, like from personal experience, like if we talk about things like this, I used to PvP a lot in Classic on a Paladin. Yeah. And like as a Holy Paladin in Classic. So I was nigh unkillable and it was so much fun for me. I did zero damage, but like it was fun to not die over the course of that and like use my different like blessings on people and like lay on hands, like all that type of stuff to keep other people alive and buff them and then watch them cleave down an enemy team. Right. Yeah. And like, I feel like that is still the same thing that happens today with these sort of buffs where it's like you hit a button, not for your own gain, but for someone else's gain. And like they then get to do a bunch of damage.
I think there is. So there's two things here. One is that these buffs are often just plain invisible in the game. Like if you put PI on somebody, there's no feedback. You can't tell if they got a lot of value out of it or if they got no value out of it. There's even like, even if you have a damage meter, it's going to be extremely difficult to tell how much value they got from it. Not every external buff has this problem. Blessing of Summer, noticeably, like you can put that on somebody and you can go look at details in game and you can like see how much damage you got from that buff. And when you go and you put it on a Boomkin that's in Rav and you get 400k damage from it, that feels good. It's like, I just added 400k damage to that Boomkin's Rav. Holy crap, I'm happy. Yeah. And I think that's a major element of it, is there's no feedback for using these externals on someone. To kind of use your example, you know, when you use a blessing or a lay on hands to save somebody, like, yeah, it's an external, but it's an external that you can feel. Yeah. You can tell that was good, that was valuable. And something like PI or Kyrian buff for druids or warrior's necrolord banner, it's just invisible. It's just plain old stats that you can't really tell how good it is without resorting to sims, basically. Sims, mm-hmm. and in some cases you can tell from logs, but mostly just sims. Like, and that's not fun. I think that's a major part of the issue, is just whether you can feel the impact, whether you can see the impact. Because when you do use it and you put it on somebody, they get a ton of value out of it. That feels different than putting it on it and like the only feedback that you get is that that person got a slightly higher ranking on Warcraft logs, right?
Right. Now that's fair. Is that, as a buff class, like, or as a person who is like delivering a buff, there's like less of a, that feedback loop isn't there in terms of like, cool, I did this thing and then here's the outcome of this thing and I can like noticeably see that right away. I mean, I can see that being but definitely an issue in the way it's used. So but I guess while I personally don't care much about this, I guess could be my point here, like I understand the gripes of people who are like, it just sucks to be a power infusion bot, right? Like to have people fight over who I have to cast this on or whatever the external buff is, right? Or even like the enhancement shaman, who is literally only brought there not because they do good damage, but because they drop a totem that makes other people do a ton of damage, right?
Yeah. I mean, they also do a lot of damage right now, but I think honestly, they could go a long way towards fixing this by doing something like, I'm going to bring an example from Final Fantasy, but monks in Final Fantasy have this ability called Brotherhood. And it's they give themselves a crit buff and a damage up. But they also give the people in their party a damage up. And so it's like actually worthwhile to like make sure you sync that up with other people's cooldowns, even if it's to the detriment of your own damage. Mm-hmm. Like if it makes you delay your cooldowns. But while it's active, whenever people in your party crit, whenever people in your party crit, you get like basically a charge of chi. Like imagine you're a windwalker.
Gotcha.
Every time somebody in your party crits, you get chi. And so that just like supercharges you while it's up and you're just like blasting. And in this case, like it has its own positive effects for you.
Yeah.
But like imagine if you're a shadow priest and your power infusion, if you use it on somebody else, you know, every time that person casts a spell, you get some insanity.
Yeah, that would be, yeah. And maybe that's how I have to treat this stuff is like, yeah, if you're going to have like these external buffs that are fun to hit, like, yeah, to be fair, the caster should get something from it too.
Yeah. And so then basically your decision making is, do I put it on myself so I can cast more things, but then I don't get the insanity? Or do I cast it on somebody else and I get insanity, but not, you know, the haste? Something to at least like make it so you can feel it when you push the button.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that for sure. Like being definitely a better situation. So that was sort of the large majority of the conversation here. Also talked, I guess as they went through, they talked a little bit about like logs and guides and some other things that like even Mage Tower, I think a bit. Nothing really crazy. I mean, the guides thing is always funny to me. Like the fact that like guides like from Wowhead in particular, like ruining the game for other players because they're just telling players what to do. And like if players who don't do it are then somehow being bullied or played wrong. But like,
yeah,
the idea is that like you probably in other games, and we've talked about this, like in other games, I will look up a guide for something because I don't want to have to read through or figure it on my own. Someone's already done all the work for me. I can just follow that. Right. And yeah. So, I mean, it's, I don't know, not too much there, but no, I listened to mostly the Power Infusion stuff. I didn't really listen to the rest of it, but
yeah,
Wellhead's got a synopsis stuff if you want to read through. So,
yeah, I mean, they also talked, they had a somewhat interesting conversation about logs and the impact of logs and parses and how that connects to stuff like PI. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they brought up is that if Blizzard really wanted to like kill the whole parsing thing as it connects to externals, they could remove the combat log. Mm. I don't want them to. I straight up do not think that it is like, I think if they removed the combat log or made it like hard for Warcraft logs to exist.
Yeah.
Totally non-biased here. Definitely don't work for them or anything. But I do think that if they made like it hard to use logs, cutting edge rating would completely die. Like there would be a few top end guilds that would still be able to do it with just like details and add-ons in game.
Yeah.
But like everybody else, like it would just wither and die.
Yeah. Yeah. I also think that's super heavy handed for them. I mean, I don't like the whole parse culture thing is like, I guess one of two things, either, yeah, it would die in your case or in my mind, someone would figure out a way to pull combat data the client.
I mean, the way it works in Final Fantasy is there's actually an external program that reads memory.
Yeah.
And if they remove the actual combat log, that would probably end up existing because it's just too useful. But yeah, it's,
parse culture. I can't believe you work for the devil.
Yeah,
just furthering that idea. No, I'm kidding.
You should have seen the conversation, the Final Fantasy Discord or Final Fantasy Logs Discord.
I saw, so a little bit of a side, but I saw Kira's tweets about it, and I actually didn't check in, but I figured it was like he was going off on like how to do polls, like everyone, like how to have like what is it, what's it called, like confirmation bias, because like you think some, even though you're in the minority of a poll, but you and your friends think this thing that you think everybody thinks this thing. So if you just,
yeah,
he was going nuts. So I figured something big happened. I don't know the background,
there's been like this small contingent of people in the Final Fantasy Logs Discord that have been like campaigning for major changes to how parses work.
Okay.
Basically to counteract like the fact that in Final Fantasy you get, if you're clearing every week, you can guarantee that you're going to get like your best in slot set up in like 2 months.
Okay.
So they really want basically your parses to not count until everybody could have best in slot, because otherwise someone like, this is really weird to me as a WoW player, right? Because like we don't like,
yeah, like you slowly get better, like parses get better and better as time goes on.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, but then like, so just like people complaining about someone getting, you know, 100 parse early on because they got their weapon the first week or something like that, ignoring the fact that if you're getting a 100 parse early on, it's probably not because you got a weapon. Like the weapon might have bumped you from a 95, but It's you're still a 95, right?
Yeah, you're not some random coming in that's just like, oh wow, I got one piece of item, and now all of a sudden I parse over everybody. Yeah, but then like
gold.
Yeah, but then like the next week somebody else is going to loot that weapon, and then they might be the best one because they might have like the weapon plus an extra slot, like armor slot or something.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's what the actual conversation was about.
Yes.
That's so stupid. No offense to the Final Fantasy parse culture people, but that's stupid.
So, like, and then they ran a poll. I say they, like Kira ran a poll on the Final Fantasy logs website, and there's like 10,000 votes or something now, and something like 70% of people voted for no changes.
So it's like the vocal minority. Awesome. Right. That's right. Awesome. God.
So that's the funny context. But part of the reason that is happening, that has happened, is that people can reasonably expect to clear the raid every week, starting from like week one. Something that would be like in WoW, the number of guilds that clear the raid week one is like one or two. Right, the last time that it's been more than one or two was Emerald Nightmare, and it was still only like 10, maybe 20.
Right, yeah.
So that's just funny. The scale of the difficulty just causes people to use logs differently. It's very interesting, something I was not super aware of.
Right, yeah. Interesting. All right, well, maybe we'll off of our Final Fantasy train. I hate that game. I will continue every time I bring it up. But we'll finish off some of the 9.2 stuff that came out. Just a couple of the changes, because there was a fair amount of updates to 9.2 this week, both in classes and balance. So real quick on just some like interesting things. There is basically a conduit changing thing that's in Xerath Mortis, basically in the main town. So you no longer have to like jump back to your sanctum to change conduits if you need to do this. I don't actually know why this is important, because my conduits don't change ever. But I guess for a class, you're like swapping between like tanking, maybe bosses.
I do, because on my paladin, I play different covenants depending on the fight.
Oh, okay.
And so there's like one conduit I might swap around for different situations, depending on what I'm doing. Like if I'm playing Venthyr, you know, maybe I want to do something slightly differently. But honestly, like, I don't think it's a huge deal, because most of that you can cover by just having different soul binds.
Right, yeah.
But in the case of something like Night Fae, where you really only have a single soul bind, and that soul bind is Nia, if you're not using Nia, you're probably wrong. DPS, don't at me. I know you guys use Dreamweaver and Corain, but
that's funny.
Spiked Spurs is really good for a tank.
Nice.
I don't think this is a huge thing, but I do think it is like, why not? Like, just why not? Because it is very annoying when, for example, we had a Boomkin in our raid flex as tank a couple weeks ago, and they went back and forth between tanking and DPSing. And so every time they were like going back to their order hall and switching conduits and having to get summoned back. And it's like, okay, at the very least, they can now like just go back to Xerath Mortis.
Jump out of the instance real quick, do it real quick and jump back in.
Yeah. So definitely a good thing. Not like huge, but a good thing.
Yeah. The other thing too is they put up some of the cosmic flux acquisition and then cost amounts. So cosmic flux, of course, is the final currency. You need it to craft rank 7 of your legendaries, I believe. Yep.
Yeah.
So rank 7 being the new version of your legendaries, you need 2,000 of it currently. And basically they went through, they've added cosmic flux acquisition to, you know, everything. So you'll get it from doing Mythic Plus dungeons. You'll get it from doing the new Torghast layers that are coming out. And you'll get a ton of it just for doing Xerath Mortis stuff. And it seems like Xerath Mortis might be the best place to farm it. And also it seems to be farmable, meaning that like, I think you get 100 cosmic flux per layer 16 clear. So you could just clear layer 16s over and over again in Torghast.
You also get 100 per Mythic Plus dungeon that you complete.
Yeah.
Even if, as far as I know, it's even if you don't time it. So that in the first box week, if you're just like spamming keys for gear, because why not? you'll also be getting your Cosmic Flux, and you probably won't even have to touch Torghast, or like you'll have to do a little bit of Torghast to, you know, polish off your Soul Cinders or whatever, so you can get your rank 7.
Right.
So
yeah. So it's nice. Right. It's from everything, it seems like. And even if you just want to sit yourself in Xerath Mortis because you want to rep grind and do that type of stuff, you get it from all that, all those activities.
It's interesting, like if how this contrasts with artifact power or Azerite power, which also came from everywhere. But in contrast to those, this has an endpoint. Like there's a point at which I can stop caring about Cosmic Flux, right? There's not really a reasonable point for Azerite power where you could stop caring about it. Like if you're doing Mythic, you needed so much in order to use all of your traits early on or to get all of your essences unlocked later in the expansion that like you just there wasn't an endpoint. You always needed more. Whereas with this, like I'll probably do 20 keys in the first 2 weeks. That's just enough Cosmic Flux to get a rank 7. Just right there.
Right.
And bam, done. Like, I don't have to think about it. I don't have to do Torghast. I don't have to do Xerath Mortis for the Legendary. I'm going to do it for the rep to get the conduits, but I don't have to think about it. I'm just going to have access to that Legendary from doing the things that I was already going to be doing.
Which is not, and it's that idea that like maybe WoW from like a player enjoyment perspective just needs less things to do. Right, like less things that you had, like you would be required to do, and like more of just like, well, they can have all these different currencies. If the currencies come from multiple currencies come from similar activities, makes it a little bit easier, right? Versus if they stuck Cosmic Flux just in Torghast, then you also had to do the rep grind in Xerath Mortis, and then you also needed Mythic Plus gear because you needed Valor and you needed to upgrade it. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like now you have this overlap that's nice. So
yeah, it is a good step up from how things were, which I wish that they had reached this point sooner, but I'm glad that we reached this point, and I'm curious to see how it all plays out. Like what are we going to think of this in 6 months once we've played through it?
We'll jot that down. We'll write that down in pencil somewhere so we can always erase it and act like we never did this. But like if we do a little bit of it, like, hey, how did the 9.2 systems compare to like what we said now, and then even like what we thought about like 9.1 or 9.0, right?
Yeah.
So cool. Yeah, that's on the Cosmic Flux stuff. And then real quick, I guess two more things, and then we'll get into the main topic. We're a little bit slow. A lot of stuff happened, like we said. Yeah. Blizzard put out a really big post. Actually, one individual, a individual by the name of Scarizard, one of the developers, put out a massive post on the community forums just talking about tier sets in general and talking about sort of a couple of concepts around tier sets. Number one, like how they design these tier sets, you know, how they design, like what thoughts go into, what are they thinking about when they look at these tier sets? How strong do they think they should be? Meaning like from a power point of view, like do they go in with a tier set saying it must be 10%, it must be 15%, things like that. And then finally, how do they determine how these should be acquired? Meaning like how fast should you get them? How slow should you get them? Things like that. It is an amazing post. Like I will tell you that like a lot of this is stuff that you would, if you have played this game long enough and you've thought about this game from an objective standpoint, not just a every change Blizzard makes is terrible standpoint.
Right.
A lot of it makes sense. Like a lot of what they think about and the way that they think as developers makes sense in terms of like this is how you could arrive at this point with a set bonus. Right.
Yeah. They also spent some time, one of the other designers stepped in and explained stuff about the Resto Shaman tier set, which has had a lot of complaints attached to it because like gain heal right now is not a very good spell to cast. It's just, it's got a lot of mana and not a lot of healing. So it's just not a great spell to cast. But then, you know, breaking down why exactly they built this chain heal one, and it does line up with what Scarizard was saying. It's like one of the reasons that they put tier sets together the way they do is to try and change the spells you're using from tier to tier, which is what we want. Because changing the spells you use from tier to tier or how you use them is how we get gameplay changes from tier sets. But kind of breaking down like what the idea was for it and a little bit about how that didn't work.
Yeah.
And why that didn't work. And this is like we've been saying for years now that we want better feedback like from Blizzard, like explanations of why they're doing the things they're doing. This is what we meant. This is great. More of this.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. Yeah, and to be fair, you might not have, like, and I guess the other side of this too is like the one thing I think is like a group of players we need to also remember is like we might not like the answers that are given, right? Like we might not like what is being said, but at least we have an idea and we get to sort of peel back the curtains or like peek behind the curtains in terms of like, yeah, this is what we thought about. We didn't want to do this, or we heard you on this side, but we decided to take a different direction, and either it worked out or it didn't work out, right? But at least we acknowledge we heard you and we decided to say, you know, to do something else. So no, I think, I mean, it's a really good post. I'm not going to sort of try and paraphrase it at all. It's a lot of focus on like the DKs, because that's the, I think what Skarsgård designed.
Right.
But it's, I think the idea is they're writing from a place of like, this is how most designers working on tier sets looked at them. And right. I'll give you specific examples of like the DK pieces. So
yeah,
no, it's really cool.
Speaking of legendaries and tier sets, Hina in chat has a comment about Brewmasters. So I feel sorry for Brewmasters having to do the legendary shuffle, dealing with Stormstout's last keg, conflicting with Unity on the belt slot, shoulder slot being tier, and glove slot being tier. So the way we're going to handle it is we're going to recraft Unity on a ring and then craft Stormstout's back on the belt. But we can't really do that until we're exalted or whatever with the Enlightened. So before that, it's going to be like crafted on gloves and hope you don't get tier gloves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like gloves are generally going to be the weakest slot, because that'll be the Mistweaver idea too, is that we'll probably put either an offset piece or use our legendary on gloves.
Yeah.
At least initially, so.
So yeah, I'm not looking forward to that either, because I just know what's. I'm gonna make my rank 7 on gloves. I'm gonna get tier gloves first, and I'm gonna have to put them on in order to turn on my 4 set. And it's just gonna be better to do that. Like with my luck, I'm gonna get the shoulders and the gloves. And I'm gonna need both of them to turn on my tier set. So then, in order to actually have double legendary plus tier set, I'm going to have Revered or Exalted, whatever it ends up being, with Xerath Mortis, so I can put Unity on my ring.
Yeah. It'll be fun.
Having all the legendaries go on different item slots was a mistake.
I think it's a fun, like, I mean, maybe in terms of like the acquisition, but now that you get everything but the base item back, if you do need to like re-roll it, like the cost is gold, which I know on a smaller server that you're on is a huge issue, but I think that's better than having to like recraft everything. Yeah,
it is. It is. But I also like am not looking forward to having to spend like 250K on the first rank 7 and then having to spend another 100 or 150K on the second one.
Gotcha.
It's going to be. Yeah.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, yeah, hopefully these sort of posts continue, I think is the sort of the feedback I have. So I tweeted that out. I was like, cool, let's just keep this going in 10.0. Cause I think that'll be where it really gets to see some of the interesting stuff.
If we get blog or like blue posts like this during the 10.0 beta, I'm going to be over the moon.
It'll be great. Even if it's nothing about Monk, if just in general they write like this, then at least the idea is they're having these conversations behind the scenes, and maybe they just don't have someone to write about us, but like it bodes well for the way that they're looking at least the way that their development sort of procedures are being like viewed as by the community, I guess is the nice part. So, So cool. So we did get a PTR build this week, and I don't have a ton. There was really nothing for Monks here, but I think there's two things I wanted to sort of just quickly mention is number one, Resto Druids, Holy Priest buffed. Resto Druids, 10% healing across the board, 10% damage across the board, and a bunch of talent changes, which is really cool. Holy Priest, similarly, 10% healing, 15% damage across the board, and a bunch of changes to their talents. So while this isn't a podcast that focuses on that, that's awesome. They need to do more healing. I think it's fun for them.
This is good. And that is paired with Holy Paladin nerfs. I don't know the exact numbers, but unlike the last time that Holy Paladins got nerfed, where it ended up just being a tooltip bug, these ones are real.
So they nerfed Ashen for healing for 15% for all specs, which actually To be fair, while it sucks for Holy Paladin, might be a bigger protection paladin nerf, with their Ashen now becoming a little less strong, if that was a thing. And then
oh, you definitely used Ashen. Like I was using Ashen as a healing CD.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a little weaker now for protection, along with Holy and Rhett, right? I don't think Rhett ran Benthir, but then Holy Paladins themselves got a damage reduction by 12% across Ashen for them, Hammer, Judgment, Holy Shocks. A lot of their core damage abilities got a reduction, and they removed rank 3 of Wings, which I don't actually know. I forget what rank 3 did.
It gave you an extra 10% healing damage done.
Yeah. After it, oh, that's right. Yes.
It's pretty
significant.
It was apparently a Holy Paladin only buff, which explains why I didn't know about it, because I've specced Holy like twice.
Yeah.
And both times at level 60 already, so I didn't like get rank 3 while leveling or whatever. But removing that rank 3 is like very noteworthy, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So in general, Holy Paladin power drops maybe more, at least from a damage perspective for sure, more in line with a lot of the other healers. And then Resto Druids and Holy Priests get the buffs I think that they deserve, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully this brings them slightly up just in the HPS department. And hopefully above like Holy and Disc, right? Like I think that's been always the biggest issue with healing balance, at least, has been that Holy Paladins and Disc Priests and Shamans, right, bring a ton of things besides healing in terms of like external cooldowns, just general abilities that no other class has, right?
Yeah.
But they also, in certain cases, like Holy Paladins in Nathria, did the most healing of any class.
Yeah.
Along with bringing all these extra additional buffs. So like it was almost a
cake and eat it too.
Exactly. So maybe this is sort of a case for Blizzard looking at healer balance in a little more ways of saying like, hey, the healers that just do healing should do the most healing. And then the healers that bring other things, particularly in raids and other group content, maybe do just slightly less healing than everybody else. And you sort of get to make that choice. So
I do think that saying that Druids only bring healing is a little bit incorrect, because Roar is actually very good. It's been very, very good this year. There's like 3 different fights that we really want to have Roar on.
Yeah.
Boomkin's also been good, so it's not been a huge deal. And I think that's part of it. But, you know, Rest of Druid having Roar has been nice. And then Rest of Druid bringing Ironbark. Ironbark is just good. But it does, like, everyone except for Resto Shamans has a single target external. So it's not really like a unique thing.
Yeah.
But it is good. And then, of course, Resto Druids having Bear Form and being like indestructible, basically. Things that would kill anybody else, they can just like Bear Form Bark Skin and live through it.
Oh, yeah. No, it's, they get definitely strong. Actually, you're right. They bring more than just healing. But yeah, they actually, funnily enough, they got an interesting trank change. Where they gain a bunch of,
damage reduction and knockback immunity.
Yeah, while they're channeling Trank, which I think is really cool. So
yeah. Yeah. That's so one of the issues with Resto Druids on Denathrius is in phase 3, when you wanted to use Trank in phase 3 of Denathrius to deal with the damage from the knock that just like knocked everybody. You couldn't, because it would cancel Trank.
Yep.
So you would have to be very careful with the way the mirror phase worked on that fight when using Trank for it now. But if we had this for that, it would have been such a huge, huge bonus.
Oh yeah.
To be able to like just have, you know, this is where you use your Trank. Yes, we know there's a knockback, but you get to not only have your Trank there, but also ignore the knockback.
Yeah. You don't have to do anything. Just stand there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, some cool buffs to other classes, which I think is always fun. It's better to always, I think, buff other classes than nerf the ones that might be a little stronger.
Well,
so
except for Holy Paladin.
Yeah, well, whatever. They can go cry in a corner for all I care.
I'm pretty sure.
I literally the moment it came out, I'll tell you that the Holy Paladin in my guild posted like some Warcraft logs thing that was like Holy Paladins being at the bottom from a healing perspective, like HPS perspective, and then like chopping off half the bar and being like, this is okay. I'm like, F you, dude. Like, for one tier, you're bad for one tier in the past like 6 years. Calm down. So,
yeah.
If they're not even bad, which I think is the funny part in any event.
Yeah, still good.
Still see a ton of them.
Real quick, one last thing before we march on to what was supposed to be the main topic for today.
Yeah,
we got changes to a few tier sets. Fire Mage got a big nerf, not going to go into it, but Blood DK and Protection Paladin both got theirs reworked sets implemented. So now they have, instead of triggering off of either blocking or parrying an attack, which has issues with just stuff that's not blockable and scales really weirdly with number of targets, they now have something that scales off of their block chance, which works better with abilities that can't be blocked or things like that. It also has an internal cooldown in each case, but right now it is all hopelessly broken because it's just triggering on the ICD all the time, even if you haven't taken any damage.
Yeah, I was listening to somebody talking about the Holy Paladin, at least four piece, and it being like, literally people are cleaving other people in PvP. Like that's actually where it's overpowered. And like in single target situations, like in a raid or a dungeon, definitely will be a little too strong, but it's like also in PvP, like Protection Paladin is not only unkillable, also do a ton of damage now.
it's so much Holy Power. It's so much Holy Power. But yeah. That's the WoW changes for the week. So now we get to talk about the big news.
Yeah, the actual big, like a 68.7 billion big news of dollars. Yeah. So I guess, Microsoft Gaming basically agreed to or announced that they are purchasing Activision Blizzard for $68.7 billion. Which I guess would be, and people are saying it'll be the largest gaming acquisition in history. So this is huge news. I'll just say in a lot of different ways. I will be honest with you, I think it's less big in terms of Activision Blizzard and more in terms of like what this means for gaming in general in the future, I'll say. But no, this is awesome. I mean, well, awesome is I think the wrong word, but this is definitely interesting in terms of like Microsoft going out and basically like becoming the Disney of games, which is buying a bunch of IP and content to bring under their banner and then essentially sell back to the like consumers, right? Like that's the goal here.
Yeah. I am really curious. So for those that aren't aware, maybe Microsoft owns stuff like Bethesda. So for example, they would now own both Elder Scrolls Online and World of Warcraft.
Yep.
Which is very interesting, I'll say. I am curious if with the, like, there's been a lot of talk about FTC, like antitrust enforcement being actually used at all, which it hasn't been for the past decade-ish.
Yeah.
Which is why one of the reasons why we're in the place we're in as far as like internet technology and things like that. But I'm wondering if they'll let this happen.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that it's probably what I've read, I think that sort of antitrust law will be a little bit more difficult to enforce here.
Yeah,
because it's games. Well, it's games, and like I think there's the industry. It's like similarly when you try and do antitrust stuff, I think in any entertainment industry, right? Where like there's enough ancillary studios where like Microsoft isn't buying like a large percentage of the market. They just are buying a large percentage of like the largest games, you could say, right? Like including this, like you mentioned, like Elder Scrolls and World of Warcraft and all the Blizzard franchises, but like they're purchasing Activision Blizzard, which means they gain all of like Activision's publishing deals, right? They gain all of the other studios at Activision, like Call of Duty, in the mobile space, right?
Yeah.
Like
Microsoft is going to own Battlefield, Battlefront. And wait, no, EA's Battlefront, isn't it?
Yeah, EA's got
Battlefield,
those.
Call of Duty. It's just.
That's what I'm saying. They're becoming the Blizzard of it. But I mean, I think the funny thing is the outcry, at least community perception, you see this. A lot of people, I think, are excited about this because a lot of people, and at the time of the announcement, we didn't know this. I think we know this now. But at the time of the announcement, people were like, yep, Bobby's done. Like, this is Bobby, like Kotick, the CEO of Activision Blizzard. He'll be gone. He seems like a very not nice person. And And at the time, it wasn't like that was sort of the goal. I think now we've realized that, yeah, Bobby, as soon as the transition is complete, like the sale is finalized and closed, Bobby's stepping down, right? And someone else will assume the CEO role of these groups, which yeah, is...
It's not 100% official that that's going to happen, but if yeah. you don't have to read between the lines too much to see that that's probably what's going to happen.
Exactly. It also doesn't help too that like with all the like the bad press, not bad press, but with all the issues and items that have come out over the past couple months has essentially tanked like Activision Blizzard stock, right? For the most part, right? It's just been a lot of negative press, like understandably, right? And all that type of stuff. This is essentially almost like a steal for Microsoft, considering like they're paying, I think it's something like $90 a share, which is what that $68 billion comes out to, which is $30 more than their current share price. And like before this summer, before the summer, they peaked at just over 100, which you add a 30%, you know, premium on that. And like this deal becomes over $100 billion and probably something Microsoft doesn't do. So it'll be interesting to see the future of this. And there's a lot of cool, at least in my mind, a lot of cool integration things that you get into this. And like, I'm not even talking about like crossover stuff, because like, of course, the meme game was strong with this. And there was a lot of like World of Warcraft models with like the Master Chief from Halo, like photoshopped in, or like I saw one of someone mounting up on a Warthog, which is like the car, whatever thing from Halo. But the cool thing to me, the coolest thing is actually a lot of like what Microsoft is trying to do with games, which if you're not familiar with, is basically turn themselves less about like, hey, we're the Xbox people and like we create consoles and you can buy it from us, right? And more into like a games as a service type company, because they have this Xbox Game Pass thing where like you essentially, it's like the Netflix of games, where you give them a monthly subscription and you can play any number of first party games like the moment they launch, right? Yeah. Which to me is like, I actually use this service because like it's $15 a month. You can cancel whenever you want. So like for like to play the new Halo, all I really care about is Halo campaign. So it's like, I didn't care about the multiplayer. So I signed up for $15, played through the entire Halo campaign and canceled it. And that was it.
Yeah. So, and I mean, from that's kind of a win-win, because there's, I mean, at least if it were me, I wouldn't be buying a $60 or $70 game just to play the single player when I know that's not the main focus of the game, when I know like it's a multiplayer game first and foremost.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, like that's at least in my case, that would be not a sale. I would not pay for that. But then $15, you know, yeah, sure. I don't have Game Pass because my Steam collection is too large and still growing. But I am curious what this will mean. Like there's an interesting tidbit. World of Warcraft has like built-in game controller support that it got this expansion. I think we actually talked about that on this podcast. But are they going to use that and put WoW on the Xbox?
They could. I mean, that could be the other thing, is you get a lot of like cross-platform integration stuff now, right? You're a little bit closer to those developers, like the people who work on Xbox, and like maybe borrow some of those resources to get it to work, right? It might mean that like every Blizzard game in the future is a console like target, right? Like WoW, Diablo 4.
I think Diablo 4 was already going to be on consoles. Like Diablo 3 was. I know a lot of people that like their main mode of playing Diablo 3 was just couch co-op. They would just like grab a couple controllers and turn it on and play. I would not be surprised at all if I expect Diablo 4 to be on consoles. I would be a little bit surprised if it's only launching on Xbox and not PlayStation.
Yeah, I will say that in Xbox's culture in the past for things like this has been a little bit more open than Sony's, meaning like in a lot of cases, Xbox is more than willing, Microsoft, I guess you could say, or the Xbox division is more than willing to give games to other platforms, like to the, I guess in this case, like the Sony platform, right?
Right.
The PlayStation platform, and let games be developed and sort of released there, because to them, I think this is maybe the biggest change between Sony and Microsoft, at least. And I know this is a WoW thing, but or Blizzard thing. But the biggest mind shift, I think, is that Microsoft cares much more about the services side, where Sony's much more about hardware and locking you into their ecosystem. Right. And so it's sort of just mindset differences. And I think this merger or this acquisition, I'm sorry, not a merger, of Activision Blizzard is basically pushing them into, we will now have a bunch more content to make Game Pass more attractive, to make, you know, our just teams in general more attractive, right? Because now you get a lot of now cross-pollination or like collaboration between like Microsoft proper, Xbox proper, and the studios that were under their wings before, and now all these studios, right? And maybe we get bigger and better projects, right?
I do think it would be very strange. Like, I can't imagine them putting WoW on the Xbox still, just because of how, like, you can play the game casually without add-ons, but playing, you know, raiding without add-ons, how?
Yeah, I mean, and maybe this is a play of like taking like the institutional knowledge Blizzard has on like running live game services and running a live game like WoW for so long, and being like, we like Microsoft wants to invest and create a console or like multi-platform MMO, right? Like something that can run. Like, it's not WoW, but it's whatever they want to do.
Bungie is independent, right?
Yeah, they were part of both Microsoft, or not a part of, but they were owned at one point or had exclusive deals at one point with both Microsoft and Activision. But they are now independent. So,
that's great.
They were under both heading. So this is cool. I mean, I think the other thing too, which is the other thing that I saw, and maybe I don't know if you had another topic, but I want to talk a little bit about like the employee response, because old Blizzard employee Twitter was a little crazy when this came out. And like, people, I saw a myriad of like some people are just like, oh, this is cool, like, don't really know much, but interesting. And other people are like upset they didn't know. They're like, got to find out on like from CNN or whoever announced it, right? Like on the news that my company's getting acquired, right? And other people I saw were like really upset that like when they held meetings about the acquisition, like a few days later, like nobody knew anything. And so just from, I think, bringing a little bit of my personal life into this part of the conversation, is like, I deal, like my day job is dealing with mergers and acquisitions, much more on the, like, I'm the Microsoft in this scenario, where I am the one doing the purchasing, not the one getting purchased. So I don't know much about like the side of like, hey, what occurs when your company gets acquired. But I can tell you that literally most cases, there are like a handful of people that know. Like, I would say in this deal, if there was maybe 50 people, that's a lot of people that knew this was happening on either side of the equation, on the Microsoft side and on the Activision Blizzard side. Right. Like, something, it's
something to keep in mind. When acquisitions like this occur, there's like a huge gaping like regulatory thing for insider trading. People that are in the know about this have to be really careful not to do things that could get them under scrutiny for insider trading. Because like, if you know Microsoft is going to buy Activision, and you go and you buy Activision stock because you know it's going to go up, that's insider trading.
Right. Exactly.
So it's not, that's one of the reasons that deals like this tend to be hush hush until they're ready to make the announcement. And then everybody gets to know at the same time.
Exactly.
There's also the fact that some people are loudmouths like me and will absolutely, if told big news like this, absolutely leak it, because I have no self-control.
So I mean, I think it's funny that like a lot of the employees are like, why didn't we know about this before? And it's just like, they would have, the best that they could have done is done the press release publicly and then an internal memo basically at the same time, right? Like, because if there's any more space between that, like, you're right, there's regulatory issues, and then there's just like optics and things like that of what's going on. So so that's sort of the, that part of it was always funny to me. And then the other part of it was like, people were complaining that like, we held a meeting and no one knew what was going on. I was like, well, number one, it's two massive companies, one acquiring the other, and you were 4 days after it was announced, when like no one knows what's happening. Like, no, even the people who created the deal don't know what's happening.
So like, also important note for everybody, this hasn't, like, this is all planned still. Right. Blizzard has not yet been bought by Microsoft. The deal is like going to be finalized sometime in 2023. So like we're a year plus out from this actually being really truly finalized. So there's a lot of time left for details to get sorted out. But yeah, this is going to be, this would be a very strange time to be a Blizzard employee.
Yeah, no, and I think it's a strange time in any sort of acquisition because there's a ton of unknowns. It's just these things are not like, even though this was announced and there's the intent to buy and like the projection of this deal closing is somewhere in the future. And like there's a lot of things that happen between, hey, we're going to purchase this company and the sale is now final and you are like legally a part of Microsoft, right? Right. There's a lot of like organizational changes that may occur. There's a lot of like alignments. Like there's the idea that like just simple things, if you think about it, where like the pay structure, or not the pay structure, but how you get paid, right? Like Microsoft and Activision have different banks. So it's like, how do those things come together to make sure you still get paid? Like, you know what I mean? And similarly, like, yeah, like do you have to get a Microsoft email now? And like, how did like your collaboration stuff work? And all the type of stuff that like people is kind of boring, like day-to-day stuff of like people just doing their job has to get figured out by these guys. So it'll be a long time. I mean, the coolest things that I'm seeing is like the Game Pass stuff would be awesome if like with your WoW sub just got put on Game Pass so that you got access to the catalog of games and your WoW sub.
Sick.
Yeah.
Like, if it were like a small extra fee, like if it was $15 a month for WoW, you could pay an extra $5 and get Game Pass with it.
Exactly. Yeah. Like 100% would be amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be super cool.
I guess the other thing people were tweeting, which I don't know. Sorry. One quick other thing is that like, because of the studios that Microsoft owns currently, like they own, like, I don't know if you've played a lot of adventure games, but Tim Schafer and Double Fine, very clearly market leaders in a lot of those games, or made some very good games in that area. Like he now, since Microsoft and Activision Blizzard together, like Tim Schafer can make like a King's Quest game, or like Sierra Games was owned by Activision. So Microsoft now has access to all the old like LucasArts like adventure games.
Yeah.
And Tim Schafer can remake those now if he wanted to, like if they wanted to, like if they wanted to put that together. So there's even outside of just like the focus of WoW and Blizzard, right?
There's also, of course, kind of the elephant in the room, all of the sexual harassment and discrimination stuff that had been going on at Blizzard has been going on at Blizzard. I don't know the correct like tense to use on those prepositions, but so obviously there's been a lot of internal turmoil because of that. Microsoft in the past dealt with a lot of those issues, not on the same scale as far as we know as what was going on at Blizzard. Thank God for that. But they have, from what I've heard from people that I know there, they have cleaned up their act significantly and now are pretty good workplace. So that's the kind of thing where like they actually have people with experience doing that kind of cleanup that would be valuable to bring into Blizzard and be like, okay, here is how we are going to move forward. Here's the lessons that we learned cleaning up our act. We are going to help you get your shit together. Yeah. Related to that, there's a post from, or an email that went out from Mike Ybarra that was sent to Blizzard employees, kind of detailing some of the action that they've taken. And it's fairly like straight to the point. I'm not going to like go through the details of it. It mostly boils down to having full-time people that are dedicated to doing this kind of cleanup work. And that's like the long and short of it is that there's people that they are investing money in these people to work on that. But yeah. It's that's another facet of this whole pile.
Yeah, that and I guess Mike Ybarra is going back home since he came from Microsoft. So
he used to be the Xbox head, right?
He was like one or two. I think he was like one maybe or two levels below Phil, right? So he was like he led their third party developer interactions, or like how they did all those third party things. I think that was his team. So yeah, no. So he's going back, which I think is just funny. Like people, I saw somebody was posting something about like he was the mole. He's like the reason this happened.
He was on the one on the inside.
Yeah, exactly. Getting this deal through. No, but yeah, I think what he posted is an interesting take. Cause like, so I'd always do the thing. I'm like, oh, they say they're hiring for all these positions. Like, are they really? But if you actually go to like careers.blizzard.com, like you'll see a bunch of listings for like HR or like culture type positions that they actually are hiring for, at least since they haven't posted. So
there is also the possibility that those listings, like there's always a possibility that those listings are for show. Like, because they can list it and then just never hire anybody for it. Like, just leave it up there for a while and then remove it, which is something that happens in academia, not specifically for diversity, equity, inclusion kind of jobs, but more broadly for like professor position. There's a lot of stuff that goes on there, but it is a thing that sometimes happens that people will list things and then not actually hire somebody for it. We'll have to wait and see. That's really all we can do.
Yeah. So I think it'll be exciting for them whenever this goes through. But I think, to be fair, we're not going to see anything, at least if we focus now back on WoW. This isn't going to affect 9.2, probably will not affect 10.0. And to be fair, probably if anything, maybe some of the later 10.0 patches get some sort of like, whether it's integration or some sort of, you know, rewards from this merger come fairly late. Right. Yeah.
On that timeline kind of thing, like if we expect 10.0 this fall, which would give us like 8 to 10 months of 9.2, which is a lot. Yeah. It's a lot. Then, you know, we would be looking at the merger finishing around like 10.1 or 10.1.5 if they actually get their stuff together and are timely on these patches.
10.1. Aren't releasing a patch every 6 months.
Yeah. Or 8 months, God forbid. 9.1 released in July.
Wow. I didn't realize it was that. I thought it was like August or September. Jesus.
July.
That's crazy. So it's been a while.
We have. So if 9.2 comes out in February, we're going to have had 8 months of 9.1. Which 9.1.5 brings some stuff, but it does not bring that much.
Not at all.
Yeah. But this is the kind of thing, like, that's the timeline. Like, the merger's not even going to be finished until, like, 10.1 timeframe. And at that point, you know, that's when, you know, so, like, 10.2 would probably be the earliest we would see any ramifications on WoW from this merger.
Yeah, and even then, with it being so close, like, they'd be minor at best, right? Like, I mean, I think it'll be a while before I see anything. I think what we could see earlier, like we've talked about, is like them moving WoW or them moving Activision Blizzard games under Game Pass, which would be cool. It'd be interesting to see how that, not only WoW, but it affects like the other, like the Diablo games and like Overwatch, mm-hmm. Overwatch 2, stuff like that. So, I mean, I'm excited. Mergers are cool. They're always exciting. Microsoft seems like they are a decent company to at least work under. I don't think there's been many. Other than Bungie, I'd say, which had their split from Microsoft was pretty amicable. I think they just signed a bad deal because they didn't retain the Halo IP. They just were the developer, so they maybe just signed a bad deal. But I think it'll be. I mean, Microsoft's a big company. Be interesting to see what they can do, what maybe Blizzard can do with some of the resources that they get from them. So I think that's everything on the merger side. So people just need to cool their jets. Like,
yeah, this is gonna be
world's not gonna change tomorrow with this one. It's a lot of money, two very big companies. So
we're gonna be talking about this stuff for a year before
I'm excited
it actually wraps up.
Yeah, can't wait for
a big deal.
Yeah. Well, all I'm worried, I think maybe 10.2 might include like the Clippy update, where now we get Clippy into all of our games just to help us.
Yeah. So Clippy's going to pop up and he's going to go, hey, it looks like you're having trouble with your rotation. Would you like me to give you a guide?
Exactly. And then link to Wowhead. Oh, be so good. But no, it was the I guess we didn't really talk about it too much, but the memes on this one were very good. So yeah,
And it's like there's this evolution in the memes. You know, it starts off all the Clippy jokes, just every single way you could possibly joke about Clippy being allowed, all of them, including as a pet, which would actually be hilarious. I would not be surprised to see eventually happen.
Yeah.
But then people going, wait, what if you flip this around? And it's like Magni champions and wounds in Microsoft Word.
So good. So good. I saw one. It was the Monty Python script. The nobody expects the Microsoft acquisition instead of the Spanish acquisition, and which was funny.
Yes.
It was a good one. So
yeah, there's a bunch of good ones. Yeah, if you were not on Twitter the day that this happened, you were missing out.
No, 100%. So 100%. So, well, cool. I think it's all in the merger. So we'll see. Yeah. We'll see what comes out of it. But I mean, it looks like we are marching closer and closer to a 9.2 date, which, to be fair, is looking more and more like mid to late February, more on the earlier side than the later side. So we might not have too many more weeks of killing Sylvanas.
I am once a week. So excited to be done with Sanctum of Domination. It's gone on for too long.
Yeah, it's funny. I was thinking back of clearing when we were doing like at the end of Sancta, or not Sancta, but end of what's the first castle, Nathria, right? And I hated clearing Nathria, but I think it was, and this, God, you're gonna win this battle. I'm pissed. And I think I hated clearing it was because Stone Legion Generals was such a more like nerve-wracking boss to heal and do than KT was. So it was like every week was just like
they gutted KT. They just straight up gutted KT. If they had gutted Stone Legion Generals, I don't think it would have been bad.
Yeah. It's just that like, it's just that fight was just
like that fight, you know, they made some pretty substantial nerfs to it. You know, when they nerfed the Goliaths and they nerfed the healing reduction. Yeah. That was pretty big, but it was not on the scale of like what happened to KT. If they had, then I don't think it would have been as bad to sit there clearing it for 6 months, 8 months.
Yeah.
You know,
I think Nathria was worse to reclear. So I don't particularly mind Sanctum going away just because it is fairly easy. Like even Sylvanas at this point it's not hard. It's just like, can all 20 of us pay attention for 14 minutes?
Yeah. Oh, we're doing a speed strat now. It's great.
Oh, you are.
We don't hold damage in phase one.
Interesting.
Let me pull up our kill time from this week. We had our fastest kill yet. It was 12 minutes, 30 seconds.
Not bad. We have been cycling alts in. So we have been essentially testing our 19 manning abilities for that. Yeah. So we're literally probably, I think last week we got pretty close. We were like half, like we hit that final veil where you push her right before she does chains. We were like 84.8, I want to say, or something like that in our best push. So, because we get to get her 84.5, right, for the turn. Is it lower 84, than that? 83.9. Yeah, so maybe we're a little bit off. She
has to go below 84%, basically.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So
but yeah, so we're close-ish, but we've like at least one or two alts in pretty much every raid at this point. So
yeah, I mean, we have technically their alts. It's like people re-rolling though. So like we had a DK re-roll to Demon Hunter. He's been in. We have one of the officers that has been re-rolling. It feels like every week because he's been like whatever, you know, I'll play whatever the raid needs kind of players, and what the raid needs has kept shifting. So like he was going to be tank and then we got a good tank recruit. So now he's going back to Warlock. So yeah, it's been an adventure. But yeah, it's Sylvanas. Like when you don't have to stop damage, you'd save so much time. It's a 12-minute fight.
Interesting. But I should sort of push for that.
It requires having like all this gear to be able to make that push. Cause we're doing it with three boomkins raving on pull. Like I'm gonna actually real quick, I don't want to spend too much time on this. I'm gonna pull up our phase one damage to Sylvanas Windrunner real quick because I've already got the log open because I was looking at our kill time. Damage done, Sylvanas Windrunner. looks like somebody screwed up their Rav. But look at this. Like,
it's crazy.
Our rogue's killing it, but like triple Venthyr Boomkin, you know, yeah. we're doing 150k raid DPS, and one third of it is like the Boomkins and the rogues.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. Yeah, we should, I should, maybe we'll try and do this. I think the problem is too, for us, it's just like our DPS are just not good at changing things. So like
the
big thing, we are creatures of habit. We'll say for the cooldowns for like the next phase.
Yeah, the big thing is it changes your healing CDs. And if you are currently having Boomkins use a second round of the intermission chains, they don't get to do that anymore, which means you have to be really on point with your intermission chains in order to like kill them in time, which we've worked it out. We've got it really, I'm really happy with how we're doing on those now. Like people really, really got their shit together on the intermission. I wish we had done this during, like had that happen during Krog, because it would have been shorter. But like we were with multiple Boomkins using their AoE route, killing the chains in the intermission on like Rive 4.
Oh, wow.
And so now with the way we're doing it, we're killing the chains consistently about Rive 5, maybe 6. It's like right on the edge of getting the 6th Rive.
Interesting.
So it is like, but like when we first switched to this strat, it was, we were losing a bunch of people to chains just ticking down. Like,
oh, really?
It would be like Rive 7 or Rive 8, and people would just die to the dot because people were so used to our Boomkins just like soloing the phase.
Yeah.
They didn't have to pay attention.
God, that would 100% be me though. Like in my team, like just screwing that up 100%. Yeah. So, man.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That has made Sylvanas better now that it's not, you know, 15 minutes long.
That's good.
And that's, I know, good. People are happy to not have to stop DPS. So
yeah, you just keep blasting.
Because we now have zero damage stops in the raid, except for KT. KT, oh, nice. We still have to stop. But we only stop once now. We stop in phase one, and the rest of it we just go.
That's not bad at all. Yeah, I guess that makes the fight definitely more fun, I'll say.
Yeah.
A little bit easier, so.
Yeah.
Well, cool.
But that, I think, with that little tangent out of the way, I think that is going to wrap up the show for today.
Yes.
Thank you all for watching and listening. Hope you enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, and you want to support it and the other work that we do over on the Peak of Serenity, like the work we're about to be really getting started on to do all the guide updates and everything for 9.2, you can support us over at our Patreon at patreon.com/peakofserenity. And of course, we would invite you to come and join our Discord, which is open to everybody, not just our patrons, and has a lot of great information and good people in it. So come hang out. Lounge channels are good fun. Questions channels are always active.
Yeah, be a pal, be a friend.
Yeah. But that is going to bring our show today to its end. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye-bye.